Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Another Monday evening, the same Edwin. Hi Edwin, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Martin. I'm doing fine. Yeah, like it's, but there are a lot of people out there freaking out. You know, there's some calling the bottom of the market, others saying that banks will allegedly honour indicative approvals. I've yet to see that, and others are just simply carrying on with their conspiracy theories. You know, government's calling fractional rental rates rental stress, and there's a lot to talk about tonight. That's for sure.
Oh, that certainly is, absolutely. And it's fascinating, Edwin, to an extent that we've been highlighting and predicted ahead of time some of the things that are now playing out, right? And I guess it's because when you've been around as long as we have, we sort of know some of the things that are likely to be bubbling to the surface. I have to say that some of the people who I've seen recently on social media seem to have a very two-dimensional view of the world, right? I think you need three dimensions at least at the moment.
Look, I think you need more than that. I think you probably need four or five dimensions. You know, but there's a lot. Then there's the metaverse. So, there's a bit for everybody, but it's just interesting to see how people's thoughts and countenances, you could just imagine how droopy they are when they read tweets coming out left, right and center. You and I keep on saying one tweet or one indicator does not make the market. One sale does not make the market. One hot sale, one low sale, one in between does not make the market. One auction clearance rate, a point does not make the market. And furthermore, as you and I spoke about just before the rant, as we were preparing, people have also got to understand that the governments are influencing the markets more than ever before have been doing so since 2020, whether it be through mandates, allegedly for your health, allegedly for saving the planet with all this, all that good and fine. But but when it comes to controlling us, controlling the people, controlling the markets, controlling everything, and just putting us to the side and manipulating things to work in a way that they want it to work, not that it should work systematically by sheer natural causes. I mean, unless you've got that in mind, you might as well step off the ladder and go take a breather, because if you're going to get caught up emotionally, there's more emotion flying around Twitter than ever before with regards to the markets at the moment.
Yeah, well, let's just put this one up, because this was actually a bit of a sort of a mishmash of some of the recent things, right, from purple bricks and from 50-year loans and from other shenanigans, right? So there's a lot of shenanigans around at the moment, which is not necessarily actually indicative of making good decisions. I think you're right. People should take a cold shower, just sit down, relax, and let the world go by a bit rather than actually getting caught up in the mayhem.
Yeah, look, I believe we're going to see it as early as next month's call by the RBA. I don't think it's going to be as high as a lot of people would like it to be. I think we might only see a very nominal rate rise if we see one at all. Again, not because there's a logic behind it. It's because of how they want to manipulate and control this market. That screenshot that you put up there, I mean, this is another way of controlling. I mean, now in that article there, Martin, it's basically two things that stood out to me. One was, it says it's a call. It was saying the normal people, 50 year loans so that normal people can buy a home. Shit. I mean, so So all the normal people can start lining up. So all the people that were buying previously, they weren't normal. But what were they? What
they were obviously they? Abnormal because they actually decided to overcommit themselves. It's worth saying this 50-year mortgage thing is actually from the UK, right, where effectively they're floating the idea. And the fact there is a non-bank lender in the UK who has now essentially said, we can potentially do 50-year mortgages. And by the way, in Japan, you know, they're even longer than that. So this is not necessarily, but, you know, this is an intergenerational mortgage, basically, isn't it? You can, you know, basically get your kids to pay for it.
Yeah, and this is at a fixed rate. That was the interesting thing, the second point in that article that caught my attention. It was a fixed rate for 50 years. But as you say, and as we spoke about months ago, this wasn't going to, for you, it's almost, we jest about it, we joke about it, but it's one of these things, like it's no longer, it's just a guess of which lever they're going to pull here in Australia. I mean, we will follow suit if there isn't a slowdown with immigration that we're going to be talking about later on as well. If there isn't a slowdown in property price drops, if there isn't a cushioning of those drops, I can, you know, this is pretty much on the cards as far as I'm concerned, and all because, you know, as much as we jest about it, all because most of the people that are in politics, from the local government to the state and federal governments, most of them have got investment properties. You know, which politician wants the property prices to drop by 40-50%, especially if they bought in the last 2 years themselves?
No, that's exactly that's, right.
That's my conspiracy. That's my conspiracy.
Yeah, theory. I'm not sure it is a conspiracy. I think it's pretty much proven according to the I mean, there were some very interesting stats from New Zealand, right, which show that actually politicians had a much higher representation in terms of multiple properties, investment properties, than the average Kiwi. I'm sure the same is true in Australia, although, of course, it's harder to get information in Australia. Mind you, if the Prime Minister can be the Minister of this and that and the other thing else, why wasn't he Minister of Housing as well? He missed that one, didn't he?
Oh, look, he did. He did. What a great opportunity. What a great opportunity. Bloody ScoMo. And he calls himself a marketing guru.
Yeah, I do. I feel he missed a great opportunity there because obviously he's got and had very strong connections with the property sector. I'm surprised he didn't, quietly sneak in there as well. But maybe he had too many other ministries to juggle with. But I'm surprised he didn't get that one too.
And the other thing is that we're finding is with regards to controls and manipulation and what's happening with local people. I mean, China is in a world of. is in a world of poo at the moment. And again, we're going to be sort of opening that up a bit more. And obviously it does, and it will continue to have an effect on our economy and will continue to have a long-lasting effect in the property sector as well, which we're going to be talking about later in the show as well.
Yeah, well, the WeChat chat chat's quite interesting, right? Because, you know, economy in China continues to slow. There were some announcements last week that they were going to throw more money at some of the developers to try and stop them from falling over. They've reduced some of their interest rates further, but some mortgage holders are also not paying their mortgages. So it's a mess.
Look, it is a mess, but they've got Xi Jinping must have read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People, because he's forgiven the debt of 17, I think it's about 17 African nations, Martin. How good is that? Mm. How good is that? I wish he'd spend a bit of money here, or maybe he did in Victoria. And with the Belt and Road program, and I wish we took on his loans and he forgave us of our debt as well. I mean, it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And then, but yet in the local front, the people are absolutely choking. They're just riots everywhere, which you don't see. WeChat's being censored left, right, and center. You can't get hardly any news out. Interesting. There was a speech by Lee that got censored because he basically went against the narrative as well, against the hardcore party lines. His speech was censored, and one of potential Xi's opposition, another potential opponent. Just got put in jail for about 13 years, I believe, as well. So there's a lot happening there in China. But in what we've got to understand as a nation, as a people, as in our property market here is that how is that going to affect how China coming to a grinding halt economically, in a lot of closures and businesses going under. How is that going to affect property prices here? How is that going to affect a lot of this, the prices in the arena that you and I talk about on a Monday night? That's going to be another thing that you've got to take into account before you go buy, before you go sell, before you go to rent, because it will affect us one way or another.
Well, that's absolutely right. And it's interesting that I was reading the other day, there are many, many visa applicants from students coming, trying to get into Australia, right, 10,000 a week in the educational system at the moment. A lot of those are actually coming from China because they're trying to leave the sinking ship.
Everybody's trying to leave the sinking ship, and a lot have already left. As a matter of fact, there was a report I'm not sure whether I've shared it with you already or whether I've got to get to one of our guys that had it. But the report went something along the lines that this is something that got censored fairly quickly. I hope somebody took a screenshot. But somebody made a comment in one of the media social media platforms over in mainland China, and went something along the lines of, there's a hundred. They challenged the Swiss banks that there were 100 families that were holding the equivalent of the national GDP in funds held on behalf of 100 families of China's GDP. So that was and the Swiss bank, the Swiss counterpart, came back and said, no, that's not true. That's not true. It's actually 360. And by the way, that's just, there's a lot of other banks as well. So as if that makes a right.
So no, two wrongs don't make a right, does it really? No. Oh, that's pretty crazy. So
this is the crazy stuff that's happening there, and let alone all the stuff that we are privy to with what's happening over in Europe, in America, Canada, and everything else. So, look, as we've been saying for a long time, I've been saying for a very long time before the pandemic, Australia is a great country, and a lot of people I know, because I've got family that live in all parts of the world, including Europe, and a lot that live in America, in North America, and some even in Canada. I've got friends pretty much all over, and it's an envy. We are an envy to the rest of the world, and we are far away from a lot of the stuff, the shenanigans that go on. But we are not, we are not immune to the BS that politicians play with the local economies, with the local markets, with the local people, the constituents that they're meant to serve. Unfortunately, we're not immune to that. It just in a way, sometimes it gets magnified because we're a smaller population, and we can see it from a mile away.
Absolutely. Well, what about the local WeChat chatters, right? Are they ready to buy property, Edwin?
Well, look, they're telling us they are. They've been getting ready for a while now, and as a matter of fact, their chatter is they're going out and not necessarily making offers unless they get an offer. When I say not necessarily buying, but unless they get an offer that's pretty much at the price point that they want to enter the market in, but they are ready, getting ready, and they will be coming in spring is their call. Interestingly enough, at the same time, one of our followers sent me this that he received in his email about one of the local real estate officers saying that they're seeing a great deal of number of people turning up to open homes and the like, and it's something that the posts on Twitter have been going on about as well, how they've noticed a lot of people turning up. But look, it could be the WeChat chatterers going out there and checking things out, but not necessarily buying, because I still don't see I'm getting reports. I'm not getting reports of actual properties going, selling a lot quicker. We may have seen a rise in auction clearance rates. We may have seen a rise, but then again, in comparison to last year and that, the numbers have been relatively low, and that the low numbers just doesn't show any confidence as far as I'm concerned. And the testing ground is really going to be spring. And this is what the WeChat chatterers are waiting for as well, because they also have the opinion that there's going to be a lot more listings on market in spring, and that is when they will spring to action.
Well, yeah. So, of course, the question is at what point, what price? Because a lot of them are aware that prices are easing back as well. So that'll be an interesting story. And shifting the conversation forward, WA, of course, is claimed to be a unique and different market with prices still rising, etc. But it's not quite as straightforward as a lot of people are claiming. Not least, of course, because of the demand from interstate and particularly now trying to pull overseas people in again.
This is the I told you so segment, Martin. Yeah, South Australia, WA, our premier just, went to, spruiking New South Wales as well. So it only leaves Dan Andrews and in the Queensland Premier to also shoot off to all parts of the world to try and bring talent into the state. But look, I reached out to one of our followers and somebody that I've known for almost 8-9 years now, and I've met with him personally. He's an agent in WA. He's also pretty much into economics and likes to look at the broader picture of the property market as opposed to just what a lot of agents do look at, the narrow view of just their little backyard. You know, and I reached out to him and I said this morning, I said in relation to this article that I was reading, and I said to him, "Yeah, morning, mate, hope all's well. What's your take on this piece?" And I posted the article. Would like your thoughts as I will be sharing on the Monday Rants with Martin. First question, are enough homes being built in WA at the moment? Two, what about the shortages of materials? Three, is enough being done to encourage local talent to enter into the workforce? And four, what about builders going broke due to little cash flow to maintain their operations? Hope you can share some of your thoughts, and the article is pretty much that, the push for migrants, talent, because people are complaining about not being able to work. Well, if you got rid of those stupid mandates that they've got over there, maybe the local talent would get back into work. So he writes back, "We're short on everything, and the worst part is, where the heck are we going to house these migrants that they want to propose that they want to bring in? I think wants to bring in about 10,000 rapidly, and he even says that they even want to bring in property managers from interstate and from overseas." So then I wrote to him and I said, "From your local knowledge, is there a lot of construction happening at the moment, or have things stopped due to the shortages of all sorts?" Right, and this is where it gets interesting, Martin. Where in his response, and as I said, he's a very, very educated guy in relation to, what's happening in a broader context as opposed to just his little backyard. And he says lots of government construction, as they have tied up all the major builders and contractors and suppliers. Good luck if you're a punter getting a normal home built. Roads, rail, all happening. Homes, not so much. Material shortages, labour shortages, and costs rising. Hence, home buyers still buying existing homes as they get the instant gratification as opposed to building with contracts that mean nothing, plus costs and variations, etc. And there you go. And further to that, we've also got an article in the Sydney Morning Herald spruiking, Immigration Minister warns Australia could fall behind on skilled migrants. So there's your push that you and I spoke about months ago, even before the elections.
Yeah, afraid I told you so, but I did tell you so, and you told me, and we both had a heated agreement about this, that immigration would be the lever. And, of course, we discussed last week that Albo's talking about, the conference in a couple of weeks and then using that as a platform to bring another 200,000 in. By the way, if it was 200,000, that would be the most sharp increase in migration we've almost ever seen. Interestingly, I was looking at some other data and then showing that the people leaving the country too. So it might be they're putting them in the top of the hopper and they're going out the bottom of the hopper. I don't know.
Who knows? Well, they might be going over to New Zealand. Who the hell wouldn't go to New Zealand anyway?
Well, they've just renationalised KiwiBank again. So I thought KiwiBank was owned by the government, but they've just spent another $2 billion on buying more of KiwiBank. So it's more owned by the New Zealand government than previously. I don't know how that works, but that was another a little wacky thing that's came out today as well.
Yeah, everything's becoming wackier by the week and by the month, Martin. We just got to stay on our toes and just keep on doing what we're doing and trying to put information out there so people can be informed and make better decisions moving forward, like I said, in buying or selling or even renting for that matter.
Yep, absolutely. Everybody needs to get a real grip as to what's going on and don't get too swept up by the tweets and things. But the numbers don't lie, do they, Edwin?
Look, they don't. And this is something that I've been firmly fixed, especially over the last 2 years. Even before that, 2019 was, in comparing the 2019 numbers to 2018, because we were starting to see a real recession happening at the end of the year. And it was but for the pandemic that really saved a lot of small businesses. And as I keep on saying over and over again, it really saved the real estate industry because a lot of agencies were floundering. So the numbers... The numbers are shut. Look, are consistent again. We've gone over the start of the week. We're hitting above 19,000 for the start of the week, which is consistent from last week. Spring doesn't start until the first week of next month, and you won't really see the spring activity till middle of September anyway. But all I know from the conversations I've been having with a lot of agents and old acquaintances is that they're doing a lot of CMAs, which is comparative market analysis, to give people basically a guide or a quote to put their properties on the market. So let's see what happens moving forward. So numbers don't lie. They're tracking higher and are consistent with what we've been seeing throughout winter. They didn't drop at all. They just kept on going higher. The auction numbers, again, it's indicative of being prepared for spring. We can see the rise of auction listings or properties going to sale by auction, by way of auction, have increased over 12% for Sydney in comparison to last week, and I can see that as the so-called spruikers hit the mainstream. We'll get more people over the next few weeks going to auction as opposed to doing a private treaty sale campaign, and we'll see those numbers increase as well. But look, sadly, the rentals are stayed relatively subdued and a little bit lower than the previous week, which is really frightening because this is the what you and I are calling the fractional rental crisis that the government and nobody wants to talk about. Yeah, and if you don't talk about it, I guess it's not there.
No, so, well, it's like the old argument, if a tree falls in the wood and nobody hears it, did it fall? It's a bit like that. If you don't talk about rentals, there's not a problem, except, of course, there is a huge problem. And I've had, I think, four conversations with journalists this last week trying to get them to actually write stuff on rental stress and the difficulties around rent. None of them want to touch it. They all want to go back and talk about mortgage stress again because that's sort of safe because everybody has been talking about it, right? Nobody wants to discuss the, 1.9 million people in rental stress, according to my latest models, nearly 2 million. And the worrying thing is that number is going up and up and up and up, and the supply of rental property is not going up. And I've got a number of people now reporting that they've had not 5, 10 or 15%, but 20% increases tabled for their rent to go up, within the next few weeks. And these are huge increases.
Yeah, and a lot of these increases, Martin, are with homes. And this is where a lot of these economists and these property reporters and spruikers and partners don't get it. And they, because they generalize everything, they put everything in the one basket, and you've really got to dissect the market, and also with rentals, and these increases are really happening across homes a lot more so than apartments, because there are still a hell of a lot of apartments that are vacant and are not being rented. The majority of those 1.2 million that you and I have often talked about, that Catherine Cashmore puts out as to being vacant homes, predominantly apartments owned by overseas investors. And that's a travesty in itself. But these rental increases that are happening, and are happening a majority around home rentals, is really putting a lot of pressure in other areas of the economy.
Yep.
And other factors that influence and I guess makes us almost like a third world nation, because there's going to be a lot of families that are going to be displaced. A lot of where does a young family go to Martin when they can't? Where do they go? They go further out west. They go further inland. How far do you go? I mean, the mountains, and all the way to Lithgow, rents have increased by, in some areas, by up to 30%.
Yep. And the problem is, of course, if you go further out, then you're going to spend even more on getting around, right? So cost of fuel to travel, or if there's a train, even traveling on the train. So you might save a bit on rent by going further out, but you've got lots of other costs. And that's I'm seeing in my data.
And that puts a lot of pressure on the markets there in the regional towns as well, Mark. So because then where do they go?
Yep.
Yeah. The pressure there is felt a lot more because you've got people that may have lived in a rental home there, for two generations. Some of my family and friends, own property in regional areas. I'm talking, as far as even beyond parks. And the like, and so you've in some of the renters, they've been there for in their properties for in one case about 34 years. So yeah. Where do they go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you put them? Do you put them out in a paddock in a on acreage in a tent or in a
granny flat?
Granny flat. No. Or they could come and share a bunk with Jose. We're up to the penthouse now, bud.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh, very good. Okay, excellent.
$300 a week for the penthouse.
Oh, cheap at twice the price. Well, let's go on and talk about is this a conspiracy or is it wackier than a conspiracy? I haven't got my I need to write an intro, but I haven't got round to doing that yet. But anyway, wackier than a conspiracy. Here's one.
Oh, what's wackier than a conspiracy theory, Martin? Look, is this the new norm? The price of living so high that we need to, pay on installments for our food? Is this where we're going, Martin? So this is something that the WeChat chatter has put out, the local WeChat chatter has put out, and I put out on Twitter asking the Twitterati's, is this for real? I haven't got a straight answer, although there was a response from Electrified. Some of these names are hilarious. They're absolutely, I spend hours just reading the names of some of these Twitter handles. Absolutely awesome. He or she writes, most of the big fast food retailers have been offering some form of buy now, pay later scheme for a while now. Even PayPal has gotten on it, and now you can split anything into four payments over the next few months. This is crazy stuff, Martin. I don't know about you, but this is to pay for a Happy Meal or a Big Mac meal, in installments. I mean, this is where really the government should start paying closer attention. It's no longer a gimmick. It's no longer just a fad. It's not something that's, it'll pass by. This is the shit that's really going out there. Are people that hard strapped? I mean, I can see it in the rental stress, from a rental stress perspective and from what you and I've been talking about, but has it got to this point, Martin? And do I live in a bubble that I haven't, were you aware of this?
Yeah, I've been watching the rise and rise of buy now, pay later. There's a very strong correlation between those people who have got financial flow issues and using buy now, pay later. Rather, they used to use payday quite often previously, or credit cards or some other form of credit, but now they use buy now, pay later as a preferred means. But the trouble is that when you start putting electricity bills and food, those sorts of everyday things, on your buy now, pay later, that's a problem, which I'm seeing. And then the second is that people actually have multiple buy now, pay later accounts. So effectively, they're sort of shifting money between one and the next, and then debt between one and the next. So it gets pretty messy. And of course, while there's no interest paid on a standard buy now, pay later agreement, if you miss but one payment, then you get pinged with a very large cost. And around 20% of people with buy now, pay later end up paying a very significant cost, which puts the theoretical interest rate way high. And it's not even regulated as a form of credit in Australia, which is even more shocking. It's not seen as credit at all. That was a decision taken back some time ago. I think it should be revisited because it is purely credit. You can see that it is. It's being used as credit. It's being used to spread payments out and try and deal with some of the pressures that people are in. But it's building a bigger problem, and it's just creating more indebtedness for those people who've got a lot of problems already. It's just adding to the pile. And so when my household surveys come in and I look at the total debt pool that people have, mortgage and credit cards, and then they have buy now, pay later as well, this is not a good sign.
No, it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. It wouldn't surprise me if some real estate agency or, you know, one of the big brands started doing buy now, paying your rent over four installments or some shit like that. This is just sends alarm bells, Martin. With you've got rising interest rates, you've got general cost of living going up, you've got higher rent, energy, fuel, all this, and this. I mean, what next? This is crazy shit. This is like I said, am I living in a bubble that I've missed all this? This is, I don't know, Mike, but I can understand getting things on credit cards and that, and then you square it off by the end of the month, so you don't get those high installments. I can understand that to a point. I mean, because I myself don't like carrying cash around anyway. I've had my wallet stolen a couple of times. Probably more misplaced than stolen, stuff like that. So you do that for other reasons, but not just to have a meal on a given day or a given week. I mean, this is crazy stuff, mate. It's really got me, as they say, flabbergasted.
Well, I will call this is late cycle behavior, right? Late cycle in the credit cycle, late cycle. Now with interest rates rising, this is, you know, the final sign of trouble ahead. And unfortunately, I'm seeing growth in the use of buy now, pay later, specifically among those who actually have broader stress issues, where they've got rental stress or mortgage stress. So I'm afraid it isn't going away. And as I said, it's not regulated as credit as it should be. People don't quite fully understand what they're getting into. They assume it's free. But as I say, 20% end up paying quite a lot for it. And if you've got multiple credit card arrangements or debit card arrangements with multiple buy now, pay later providers, you've got a very complicated set of debits and credits going through your account. And so sometimes people just mess up on it. So it's not good. But, of course, the good news, according to Tom Pannis at least, is it's all over, isn't it?
It's all over, Red Rover. That's it. That is it. Look, I did watch the video that he had. To be fair, he does bring out some good points. But look, it's nothing that you and I haven't said and haven't mentioned before. And this is the how the government's going to control, and really how focused is the government going to be in order to cushion the downfalls, as much as we jest about it and talk, jokingly or in part jesting, part serious nature of us, the politicians owning investment properties themselves. So it's all about cushioning these the falls. But look, here's you and I with the distortion in the market, and this is what I am seeing is. We've seen the distortion in the market or in the different markets around Sydney. And the unfortunate things, which we already spoke about, was that price band where the first home buyers will predominantly jump into. That is going to be inflated because, as Tom brings out, that's where the investors are coming in. That's where the WeChat chatterers are basically focusing on. It's a price band between your 750 and your million where they're coming in, because when you look at the rental yields or the rental return of those properties, they're very attractive. Once you start going above the million in certain suburbs, we start, especially start looking at your 1.5s, your 2 millions, the rental returns just don't make any sense. So this is the unfortunate thing, the nature of what the government has manipulated these markets into, and it's really disenfranchising the first home property buyers, people that just want to jump in and live the Australian dream, which you and I spoke about before. But as to his other reasoning, I don't know, and just calling the hype of because he sold 8 out of 9 over the weekend, it's all over Red Rover. I mean, what about the fact that people have sliced or have absolutely shredded the expectations in order to meet the market and sell because they simply won out because of the other reasons that you and I have spoken about as well. But more to the point, this is just one indicator of how the market is tracking, and I don't take it as a real hardcore indicator or a big point indicator. I take it as a second rate indicator to an extent, and it's more to do with emotion. You only have to read and the Twitter posts from both ends, from the bulls and the bears and the property pundits and the and all sorts to see how emotive this the auction clearance rates are, given the fact that there's a lot of manipulation behind the scenes anyway, so it's not the genuine the real McCoy. But when you start comparing properties being on the market on a given week, let's say for last week we started around 650 that was supposed to be taken to market or being put on the market that week, but there was also close to 7,900 by the end of the week open for inspections. So it's not, but yet the mainstream and a lot of people put so much emphasis on that they're so fixated on auction clearance rates that they miss the bigger picture. But when you start separating the markets and the indicators, I mean, and in that rant he talks about two sales in Melbourne. Some crazy person went and bought a knockdown for 80 million and somebody else bought something else for 70 million and that was all wasn't going to be knocked down. But then these are people that have made a hell of a lot of cash in other investment other investments, and they just decided to burn their money, I guess. I mean, people do all sorts of crazy things when they make a lot of money. The question is it going to be worth that much to the next person should they find themselves in under stress or in a position that they have to sell or that they're forced to sell? Will the next punter that comes in with less emotion, with a bit more logic, will they pay the same price? So which leads me to one of the other points that he talked about in that video. And he's talking about the fact that there's not a lot of delinquency. I think what he was trying to say was delinquency. He called it stress. But you don't necessarily sell your property when you're under mortgage stress, as you and I know, and as you and I talk about.
Yep.
In actual fact, Martin, in actual fact, if you're under mortgage stress, I dare say, and I'm going to put myself out there, because I know, I know people that have failed to pay the bank, and one particular client of mine that hasn't paid the bank for 5 years. She's under mortgage delinquency, but the bank won't necessarily force us out because of certain things that she's been doing along the way. But so this is how slow the banks are going to be to move on mortgage delinquency unless the properties are tied up with other investment portfolios, unless the banks see that it's more of a business transaction as opposed to a principal place of living. This individual that I spoke about earlier on is an individual that suffers from different mental disorders, and hence the bank won't move in And you know, and it's a daughter of an old client of mine. So, but this is how you've got to understand mortgage stress and mortgage delinquency. Yeah, we're not seeing a lot of mortgage delinquency now, but it doesn't mean that we won't potentially see it in 6 months or 12 months. Mm. And then again, when you get the mortgage delinquency, then there's also a different clock as to how the legal proceedings are going to flow from then on when you get that final notice from the bank. Because even then, the bank can't just come to your house, knock at your door, grab your keys, and put a for sale sign up the front. They've got to go through the legal procedure in order for them to take possession of the property.
No, that's exactly right. And typically that can take up to 2 years to work through. And, you know, I often say the mortgage stress measure that I use, which is a cash flow measure, is probably a couple of years upstream of a delinquency event, because quite often people actually end up selling and getting out before they go delinquent. The banks are quite keen, actually, to encourage people to go through that route because they don't want to have delinquent debts on their book. And, of course, they don't want the bad publicity. So they will do almost everything they possibly can to try and actually, massage people through the process. But even if you do pull the trigger and go delinquent, you're not chucked out the following Monday afternoon, right? It takes 2-3 years quite often for that to work through, and in some cases the bank will never actually foreclose because, as you say, the publicity would be too traumatic on the bank. And of course, if you have lots of people who are delinquent at the same time, it's no longer just the individual delinquency's problem, but it's actually the bank's problem. And so that's the other thing they're trying to manage. They're trying to manage this portfolio. And it's interesting that a couple of banks now started recently talking about the prospective pressures on households later in the year. CBA has mentioned it. NAB's mentioned it. I made a show on that today, in fact, on my earlier conversation today. There are now some little cracks appearing, and we're also seeing some securitized pools, according to some of the ratings agencies, where you've got delinquencies of 2-3% already. So if you look closely enough, you can see some of the cracks really emerging now. So I'm not sure that on this occasion Mr. Panos has actually read the room right. It was just sort of 1 week. Let's see what the next few weeks bring. I think we're going to see this play out over the next few weeks and months. And remember this, Edwin, rates are still rising. The RBA is almost certainly going to lift the rate again early in September. And it takes about 8 weeks for the cash rate increase to flow through to a real debit for a variable rate loan mortgage holder. So a lot of people haven't yet seen the damage of July and August. Maybe they have for June and May. But it's early days, is what I'm saying. It takes a long time for this to all percolate through.
Oh, look, it does. And at the end of that, it comes back to the individual's choice, location. Like when I say choice, as in the area, the type of property, type of home, and what you really want, what you need, and as opposed to what you would wish for. It's not just one property doesn't make the market for sure, and one weekend doesn't make the market either.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about tip of the week, and this is a biggie.
Look, it's one of these things that we've been saying over and over again, and I thought I'd bring it to light because it was also brought to my attention this week with one of our clients. And I remind our followers and our friends out there that Building and pest inspections are really just visual inspections. They're not intrusive. They don't take samples away. A lot of them don't even use your basic measuring devices. If they do, most of the time they're faulty anyway. They're not calibrated. They're not kept up to date. So it's really more of a visual. And this is why I've been saying for a long time, and I said to all our clients, When we go and look at a property, even after doing our own building pest report, there's also things that are still beyond that visual aspect, you know, beyond sight, unless you start, you know, pulling gyprock off the walls, unless you start pulling the fibro off or the anything off that you want to get remediated, or you know that it's asbestos, you're going to get removed. So you don't really know what's behind it until you pull the thing off. And this is a couple of photos that one of our followers and our friend sent. And this is, he knew he had to do some remediation work because there was an asbestos sheeting in the roof of the garage. And after pulling the sheets off, this is what he found, Martin. You know, obviously, because it was a visual, there wasn't real access into that void for the inspector to have a look at. I don't know what his excuse was, but you know, they say access was limited. So not only was there, you know, old termite issues there on the one of their ceiling joists, but also you know, there was a fire there, and you know, and it looks to be a couple of years old. So these are the things that you got to prepare for. So if you're going to go out there and you're going to be buying a property with a lot of emotion, well, these are the little surprises afterwards that you're also going to be paying for. You could be paying a lot of money if you don't have the right connections and if you don't have the right tradespeople that are going to be working with you, especially in these times. There's, you know, so you got to be careful what you buy, how you buy, and the offers that you're making, especially if you're going to, you know, you're going to be making, doing any, remediation works, or you're going to be doing any renovation works, because now the prices from what things were, you know, in 2019 before the pandemic to now, you know, you know, in a lot of cases, you're paying 100, 150% more than what you would have been paying before. And it's only going to get more expensive before it gets cheaper.
Yeah, everyone, absolutely right. And just to underscore, you know, if there is a void where there's no visible access, easy access, they don't bother to look, right? So you've got to assume the worst rather than the best is what I always say to people, you know, in these situations. And if you get your own inspection, that may not pick it up because they'll go through the same process. So I guess the question I've got is, how do you actually get to understand the stuff below the surface before you buy? Or are you just going to have to say, well, nobody knows?
No, you take a lot of these things into account. Look, the guys that we use will do a more thorough job than the building inspectors that the real estate agents, that the selling agents do. So that will spend, look, the selling agents, the inspectors that they use, they'll probably spend anywhere between 20 minutes and 30 minutes at a property. Our guys will spend anywhere between an hour and a half to 2 hours at a property. Looking at things very thoroughly, and that will move things to one side if the view is obstructed, or and they do have equipment that is calibrated and that is working correctly, to do as much as they can, as much as possible, and note down as much as they can. But outside of that much, and I guess the benefit that we have is that we've got a team of tradespeople that we rely on to assist our clients. And in this case, he's reached out, and I'm going to be able to put him in touch with some of our carpenters that are reliable, and we'll look after this this follower of ours, in a way that obviously it's not going to get done cheaply, but it's going to get done properly, and but he's not going to burn his a hole in his pocket, is what I'm trying to say, because of the amount of work that we give these tradespeople. So you've got to be really, really well connected if you're going to take on properties that have got remediation work that you can see, because you can see that it was asbestos anyway. You could almost be guaranteed that the sheeting was asbestos because of the nature of the property was built. Early 60s. So, you know, it's 99.999% that sheeting was going to be asbestos.
Mm.
So you know you're going to be doing these works, and so you've got to so you've just got to be factor that into your offers that you're going to be making.
That's the key point.
And you got to and you got to make the selling agent aware, because most of them are not aware. Most of them wouldn't know the difference, between a floor tile and a roof tile if it smacked them in the head as they walked into the house.
No, I agree with that, actually. And that's really the point, isn't it? Because, you know, you've basically got to form a view as to what a reasonable and fair offer is based on an expectation of any remediation work you may need to do. Because if you don't take that into account, then you could certainly be overpaying and, box yourself into a corner. Because these sorts of fix-ups can take a lot of time, energy and money. And so you need to make sure you've got significant wriggle room, which means it's really, really critical not just to take the vendor's brief survey report as the fact. You've got to build your own facts.
That's right. And this is something that, look, I'm gonna confess something here, Martin. Right? It is what it is, and this is just I'm sharing from my heart here with our followers and our viewers. Look, the property that we bought, we knew that it was part of the studio. One of the studios was termite affected, right? Hence the reason why we made the offer that we did, and we got it at what I considered to be at the time below land value. Anyway, so in doing so, now when I inspected the property, when my building inspectors inspected the property, we came to the conclusion that a section of one of the studios was termite affected, but we didn't know how affected it was, because what we could see visually, what we could understand. They weren't active, but there's only short of pulling the gyprock down, as I said, you're not really going to know. But we took that into account when we made the offer, and we crunched the agent down, and he was aware, and we just played it, dramatized it even more. But I thank God we did, because in actual fact, I had to rebuild four walls. Originally, we thought we were only going to be rebuilding one.
Yep.
But by the end, these little bastards, the little marvels of engineering, Martin, they knew that that we were going to be poking. They must have known. Look, they know this shit. They're the marvels. They're nature's engineers, because. What we could see visually after poking and drilling and doing all sorts of things under the subfloor area, and this is being we were able to be that intrusive, right? Because I know the agent, and even still, then look at what happened. Obviously, it was all accounted for in the price that was offered, and that's the key. That is the key. Always, if you know that there's something. If you can see something visual, extrapolate that five times and take it into account that if you think it's going to be worth, or the agent's telling you it's going to only be worth $20,000 to rectify, look, put it in your head and negotiate up to $100,000 for the price adjustment, because it'll fall somewhere in between. It won't be a 20. It may not necessarily be at 100, but I can guarantee you it'll probably fall at around 60 or 70.
Absolutely, and that's right. And the time to do it is before you actually make the final bid and sign the contract, right? So go through all that process so that you know that you've got sufficient latitude to be able to deal with any of these sorts of issues that may well come up. And that's why getting a good survey is critical. And then translating that into what the price adjustment needs to be, and then holding firm to that. And it goes back to what we often say, which is that people often get emotionally attached to a property, and they almost turn off their logical brain rather than actually the other, which is you need to actually have your logical brain working, because from an economic perspective, if you actually don't make the right decisions and take the right steps, you can end up with a very, very significantly, financially speaking, slippery slope. And that slippery slope often can take you into areas that you would never, ever have thought possible. And it's very hard sometimes to climb off the slope and get it fixed. So prepare on the way in, Edwin, is the message, isn't it?
That's right. And look, there's one other aspect, and I'll leave it with this, and that is that a lot of people may be sitting there watching this video and maybe saying, oh, yeah, but I've got the money. But at the end of the day, do you have the time? Mm. It's not just about money now. It's about time. I've got Tylers on different jobs that I'm helping some of our clients attend to. That, you know, on Friday, I was trying to get something done within 2 weeks, and I said, "Look, the earliest I could get there is 3, and that's if I can slot it in." And some of the tradespeople are actually working on weekends, including Sundays, in order to get work done, and working overtime, because that's how hard strapped they are with work. They've got work coming out of the year, so they're picking and choosing what they will attend to, and when you're trying to live, as I said, you may have all the money in the world, but do you have the time and do you have the patience to actually live through a renovation? It's not pretty when you're breathing, you're sleeping, you're breathing in dust, you're sleeping with builder's dust, and you're literally eating builder's dust if the renovation is happening around you whilst you've moved in. And if you can't afford to sit back and wait till the work is done, it's not a pretty position to be in, Martin.
That's a very, very, very good point, Edwin. And I can speak from personal experience, having lived through a couple of renovations, one of which we did before we moved in, which was less painful. The other one we did while we were actually living in the place and going around with the dust and everywhere for quite a long time was not pleasant. Edwin, very important conversations. One again, thank you, Edwin. And we'll do all of this again next week. There'll be so much more to cover. It's just moving so fast, isn't it?
Look, it is. And looking forward to it, Martin. Look after yourself. And the chickens are starting to lay eggs, so hoping to see you up in the mountain soon. And I'll have we're only getting one or two a day. So by the time you come up, we might have half a dozen for you.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Edwin. See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.